The technique of spiritual awakening has been studied for centuries in the East and is outlined in the Vedas and the later sacred writings of ancient India. But such a study in the Western world, where the Christian approach has been more individual and more mystical, is comparatively new. In fact, it is little older than the Theosophical Society itself. But in the last 100 years, there has been a rapidly growing interest by the West in Eastern philosophy, and the fusion of the Eastern and Western points of view will most certainly speed up the spiritual awakening of modern man, so needed in the world today. Now, the sacred scriptures and theosophical teachings emphasize that no spiritual awakening can take place without ethical development. That is to say, without living the spiritual life. And this lecture does not deal with the ethical aspect of the subject, that is, with the ethical aspect of spiritual awakening, but deals only with that which happens during spiritual awakening to the physical, emotional, and mental life of man. I freely admit that I'm covering in this way only half the subject, and probably the lesser important half at that. At the end of the lecture, however, a brief glimpse will be given of the principles of these ethical requirements. Now, look at that. That slide, please. The first slide shows the Taj Mahal. And although the Taj Mahal is not a religious building in the true sense of the term, it is a building that, because of its beauty, has been taken throughout the world to express the highest attributes of man as far as culture goes, and it expresses something that is very close to the religious idea of spirituality. Now, this picture is interesting because it has, if you can see carefully, President Eisenhower of the United States and Mr. Nehru, the Premier of India, with it, standing in front of the Taj Mahal. And it represents, therefore, that fusion of East and West, which is so vitally important in leading towards the understanding of that which constitutes spiritual awakening. Because the West is outward turned to the objective world, and the East has always been inward turned to the spiritual world within the subjective world. And the fusion of those two attitudes towards life will, I think, take place in the future and will lead us to an understanding of what spirituality is and how it can be awakened. Next slide, please. Now, there are three, or at least I'm going to suggest, that there are three paths along which spiritual awakening can take place. And the first is spiritual will. Now, spiritual will is direct. Spiritual will is ever-present. The highest attribute of man is that which in him is divine. And the highest aspect of the spark of the divine in man is his spiritual will, which in most of us is latent. Most of us, we don't realize it exists, and very few can in any way consciously wield that highest attribute in their modern personality, the highest attribute in their whole makeup. Now, when it is wielded, of course, the latent powers become capable of being used consciously, and the man is at his highest evolutionary peak. But it's a very difficult path to tread because of the immense power of the force, the spiritual will, which is used. Next slide, please. The path of intuition is the path which, for most of us, is the easiest, And certainly, it is the path where we have the possibility of knowing something about what happens when we become spiritually awake. Now, intuition is the consciousness linked through the emotional life with the Buddhic or intuitional world. And at the intuitional world, we have that quality of wholeness, of unity, which is the has always been the object of the seers and the mystics in their search for the nature of God. Because at that level where the one life is experienced, we are one with the life of God. That is the intuitional experience. And that is an experience which belongs, as it were, to our past. We all have the ability to contact the intuitional world of wholeness, and we all do it in moments of inspiration to a greater or lesser degree. Let's see. Now we come to the third path, which I have called Antakarana, which is a Sanskrit word meaning the bridge of the mind. And that is the path that human consciousness takes when its center in the lower world of the mind is removed and lifted into the higher world of the mind. Now, the lower world of the mind deals primarily with sense impressions, with the objective world without us, with the things of the everyday world, and it evaluates, compares, and gives facts and figures about that world around us. But the higher aspect of mind, reached by crossing the bridge, is that which deals with what has been called abstract thought, idealistic thought, concepts of art, concepts that have inspired the great inventors and the musicians, composers, sculptors, and what have you. And the path that we, at this stage of evolution, must tread is the path that carries us across the bridge from the lower mind in which we normally are conscious to the higher mind in which we are only conscious occasionally. Because we all do stumble across that bridge sometimes. We get a flash of insight, a flash of inspiration, and we know something of the quality of the mind when it reaches that level. But when we can cross that bridge consciously and link the higher mind with the lower mind, we will have bridged the gap between the lower and higher aspects of man's consciousness, of man's makeup. Next, please. Now, the study of Kundalini, which is another Sanskrit word, is vitally important, because Kundalini is that power which flows up the spinal column of man. That power which is, as it were, the mechanics of spiritual awakening. It is not a path that he treads. It is something that happens during spirituality. The increase of the flow of that primary power of Kundalini accompanies any spiritual development. Kundalini is the serpent's fire. Now, I think I'll have something to say about that later, so we'll pass to the next slide. Now, the sun has always been taken as the symbol on the physical world of God. The many of the past religions have been sun worship religions. And the sun throughout all ages has been accepted as that symbol of God. Now, it's more than that. The sun actually is the center of the solar system. And the sun is the physical center of that which we call God. And we are led to the belief that at that center of the sun, well, we know, science tells us, that at the center of the sun, there is a condition of great high temperatures and extremely great pressures. In that condition, the forces that maintain the solar system are radiated to all the planets and sustain all life on those planets, and possibly, if there is life, in the interstate. Next slide, please. Now, this diagram is one that shows the Earth cut, as it were, in half. We have here a molten center of iron and nickel, about 4,000 miles in diameter. We then have the plastic mantle, about 2,000 miles thick. Then we have the rigid crust, and then on top of that we have the top 9 inches of the earth that support the vegetable kingdom, and therefore the animal and the human kingdom. There is more life, obviously, on the top 9 inches of the soil and above that than there is in the center, although there may be life the nature of which we don't fully understand. Now, I'm going to suggest that the center here is very similar to the center of the sun, although the conditions of temperature and pressure are not quite so extreme, they are nevertheless very great indeed. And I think if we have the next slide, show you what I am now going to suggest. Here we have the sun, and I believe it is even agreed to by modern science that the sun existed first before the planet. I know there are conflicting theories here, but anyway, I'm going to suggest that idea put forward by Madame Blavatsky when, in The Secret Doctrine, when she postulated that first we had the sun, and that became a close-knit nucleus, as it were, solidified first, and then those whirling vortices of particles grew together. And I think you have them in the galaxies. You have the same idea in the spiral galaxies, where actually all those particles of cosmic dust, if you like to call them that, are gradually brought together until you get a planet. So we had the sun first and then the planet following. Now, I'm going to suggest that at the creation of each planet, some of the life of God, which we have talked about in this physical aspect of pressure and temperature, was encased in the center of the Earth. And as the Earth grew older and life increased on its surface, so the temperature on the outside went down, it decreased, and yet there is still that center where the pressures are high and the temperatures are high. And from that encased center, which we can look upon as a secondary center for the life of the Godhead, the Creator, from that center there is a vital force arising. Now, I wouldn't like to say it's exactly aligned or exactly connected with gravity, but it most certainly, according to occult teaching, is definitely linked with the flow from the center of the earth, which we call Kundalini. And that flow coming from the center flows up the spine of man. And when it meets the other primary flow, the love-sustaining aspect, or the sustaining love aspect of God, which comes direct from the sun to the surface of the earth, we get those two forces meeting on the surface, and where they meet, we have the conditions for sustaining life. In fact, there are no other conditions, because if that is withdrawn, then this, as a secondary center, would be of no value. And if that life is withdrawn, then all life on this planet ceases. We are literally sustained by the will and the love of God. Next slide, please. Now, this is a diagram showing what happens in man. Here we have the primary force, the love, wisdom aspect of God, coming down from above, from heaven, as it is usually expressed. And we have this force coming up from the center of the earth, which I call Kundalini. They meet, it is said, in the center here, which is called the solar plexus center. And they meet by coming together in the form of a vortex and, as it were, intermingling in what has been called a grinding of the two forces, because they flow through a center which is a funnel, and they intermingle by twisting round and round like two whirlpools intermingling, and they flow inwards to the spine of man, and then they flow up and some may flow down. As they do so, they carry their vital energies throughout the whole of the nervous system, throughout the whole of the body. They provide the energies which give the body temperature and which gives the body much, or practically all, of its energy. Wait a moment, a little more to that. Perhaps the next slide will help us in this. There is something a little more, besides those other two energies which I have mentioned, that which comes direct from the Creator, from above, and that which comes in an indirect manner from the Creator in the center of the earth. There is a third, and that has been called vitality. And that vitality is in all life. It is the vitality that sustains us apart from those other two primary forces. That vitality is in the food we eat, in the air we breathe. And that vitality is also absorbed mainly through the four centers of the body. So there we've got the three, shall we call them, impersonal forces. And those three impersonal forces have to be studied in relation to man when we consider the three paths of spiritual awakening, because it is those forces playing upon the constitution of man that allow spiritual awakening to take place. Vitality, by the way, is very interesting because it is aligned, or it is closely allied, with what we now call vitamins. And there is no doubt about it that if we take the right vitamins, B1 and B2 and all, and the others, especially the B vitamins, we are able to absorb more of that vitality. And if we have a lack of those vitamins, then we can eat all the food you like, but we do not absorb vitality. There's a little more to it than that. We'll come to that perhaps. We have the next slide. Man has many force centers, according to the ancient Hindu philosophy. Seven force centers are taken as of primary importance, and they are shown here. We have already mentioned the solar plexus force, where the meeting of those two primary forces, the impersonal forces, takes place, and from then the flow goes to the heart center, which it irradiates. The heart center is in the cavity close to the heart. Now, these are what we would call etheric or superphysical centers, but they correspond to what in medical science is called the endocrine or ductless glands. And actually, the higher center, the center which is at the etheric or at the emotional or mental level, corresponds exactly with the physical center, which is known to medical science as the ductless glands. And when vitality is, the ductless glands keep the balance of the body development and growth, the metabolism. They keep the balance. And vitamins are a vital food for those glands to help them keep the balance. And because the two are so closely linked, they also, of course, help the chakras or the four centers to function correctly. When the force comes in here, it flows to the heart center and irradiates that center, which is the intuitional center, the center which, if concentrated upon during meditation or prayer, will reveal not only what is called the Christ principle, but it will reveal what is called also the golden person in the heart. A magnificent experience, and one that will link you with the one life which is Buddhic in its nature. Now, nearly all of us can do that. We have at some time or other felt that wonderful feeling of love, which unites us with some aspect of an idealistic aspect or with some person. In the very highest form of impersonal love, we have nearly all had that experience. That which is the Christian charity in its highest form, and that which is the basis of all biblical teaching. Now, if we concentrate on that heart, if we use it for healing, and many people do use that center for healing, and they send out that golden glow to help people, and it does heal the sick, it does help. It is impersonal, and it can do no harm. It belongs to our evolutionary path. We have mastered that center to a very large extent. And if we use that to help somebody else, we can't do harm. If we start using the higher faculties, the mind faculties, we may tend to make a person do something which is wrong from the pattern of growth which is there, or which we call the karmic point of view. That force flows and irradiates the heart. It then flows and irradiates the throat center, which, of course, is the thyroid gland center, and there you have the beginnings of the thought world, the lower mind. That's a center that hasn't such a great deal to do with spirituality, but when we come to the two higher centers, we find immediately that we have the key to the whole of spiritual awakening. Because man's consciousness in the pituitary or crown chakra and in the brow chakra here, the third eye chakra or the pineal, that man's consciousness at those points is his link with his superphysical makeup, that is, his bodies of thought and feeling. And the link exists in the physical brain. But those chakras The physical brain is the machine, but the link exists at the superphysical level and depends upon those two chakras. Those two links. The pineal gland and the pituitary gland are known to medical science, but their full function is still a mystery to most medical men. And yet you get doctors like Kenneth Walker who have written Diagnosis of Man, very interesting book covering the subject of the endocrine gland and their superphysical function. Now when the forces come in here, but there are two lower chakras. Now they're called chakras because they're wheels of force. Because, as I said earlier, when they are seen clairvoyantly by the ancient Hindus and by modern seers, they look like the petals of a flower, shimmering because they're in constant motion. Some of them have more petals than the other. And they are all, on the surface, petal-like, flower-like, and they go in through a funnel to a stem which links to the spine. These two lower ones, the spleen and the root chakra, are linked with the lower functions of man, this with sex, and the spleen with the absorption of vitality. Now, I should have said that the solar plexus, by the way, is the link, is connected to the lower emotions. You all know the expression of thinking, feeling in the pit of the stomach. That's because, actually, the lower emotions are centered there, in that center. And he had a stout heart. And all the other expressions bringing in a heart, the higher emotions. And these are not the same expressions covering the ground of the higher chakras of the mind. Next, please. Now, this is turning the human figure round the other way, and it shows how those funnels link into the spine. You see how they're all linked to the spine. And when the energy is absorbed, and moves up the spine, radiating, as I said, the whole of the circulation and nervous system, it flows right up till it comes to the head. And there it enters the superphysical world. It probably enters it here, too. Because, you know, the thyroid is very important when it comes to growth. And as it does that, it impinges upon the body of thought and feeling. Now, our bodies of thought and feeling, when we get older, tend to be crystallized and tend to become, as it were, fixed, rigid. And we tend to build a thought up and up and up. And we bring to bear bias. We bring to bear unreasonable attitudes towards things and people. And we make them, as it were, millstones round our neck from a spiritual point of view. Now, the flow of that force right up through the spine. And it corresponds to the path of Kundalini, but I'll talk about Kundalini again in a moment. The flow of that force up through the spine and through the head is vitally important to our health and therefore to our spiritual awakening. If we, by worrying about things, create blockages at this level, the force can't get out. We can't absorb vitality, and we're tired, and we are, as it were, weary. So we find that health is vitally linked with the question of the flow of the forces up the spine and through the endocrine glands. And vitamins are the food for the proper functioning of those glands and centers. I won't go into that tonight. It's really a separate subject. So let's pass on to the next slide. Now this is Kundalini, as it has always been shown diagrammatically. You'll see this, called the caduceus, in the hand of the Greek god Mercury. You'll see it taken from that symbolism of the Greek god Mercury in the medical corps in the army. They use it as their symbol. It consists primarily of here a center, which is, you can take the center of the earth where it comes from, if you remember the diagram back earlier. And it has a central pole, and it has the two snakes intertwining round that pole and crossing over, and the two snakes head here. It's fiery in its nature. It's all-consuming when it is aroused. And its arousal is, as I said, absolutely certain as spiritual awakening takes place. But its premature arousing is dangerous, unless, as I said, the ethical life that we live is of a corresponding high quality. Now, it is threefold in its nature. It comes from the center of the earth. It flows up the spine of man, and it has a positive and a negative aspect, flowing round a central shaft which is both positive and negative, or neither positive and negative. It doesn't matter much. There are Hindu words for those, but I don't need to move them tonight. Now, the wings represent, they complete the condition of complete spiritual awakening, which is obtained when Kundalini flows from the lowest chakra right up through the head chakras unimpeded, and when the consciousness of man flows, can be focused at any point from here to there. And then our memory, when that happens, when that flow takes place, our memory is complete. Our consciousness is complete and completely controlled. We would then, at that level, be able to remember what happens during sleep just as clearly as we can remember what happens during the day. In other words, there'd be a continuity. And when the spiritual awakening produces that effect in a man's consciousness, he is spiritually awake and he has the wings of liberation, the wings of spiritual awakening, which the god Mercury had in the Greek philosophy. We now come to a totally different diagram, but one that still has the two aspects, the intertwining aspects, the positive and the negative. Now, we talked about, first of all, the god or the creator in the physical world at the center of the earth. And then we have here a little bit left over in this diagram, which is again the nature of God. To work backwards, man's highest ultimate is will. Man's highest aspect here of will is one with the divine at that level. We come back through the other positive aspect, which is the mental world, down to the physical world. That is the positive root, the root of focus, where man's consciousness is focused on things, where man's consciousness tends to be separative. Here, in the lower world, it's sensed impressions. Here, lower world of thought, it's, as I said, comparison and evaluation. Up here, it's less focused. It's abstract thought, and here, it's spiritual will. Now, if we look at the other aspect, the feminine aspect, or the negative aspect, we have God here. We then have the feeling, emotional aspect of man's constitution, man's makeup, and then we have the intuitional, or as it is here called, buddhic, and that flows up. Now this negative is, as it were,
a fluidic interplay between the positive forces or the positive attributes of man's consciousness. Now, if you think of this, your emotions are ever flitting, but your mind is ever flitting, but it flits from one point of consciousness to another, whereas your emotions are quite often ill-defined. They're fluidic, they're widespread, and your intuitional world of oneness is also widespread. But the two are linked, and you find when you are emotionally upset, you can't think straight, because the attributes of your mind, which is coming down here to the physical brain, is all messed up by your emotions, by your feelings. So you see how the one plays against the other. Now, simple and direct, in the center is the red line, which, of course, is the first path that I spoke about, the path of spiritual will, which is simple and direct. And if you tread that path of spiritual awakening, you go from the lowest to the highest immediately. Or you could go immediately from the lowest to the highest. But we generally get in one, of these ways. The way of the mind, which is positive in its nature, or the way of intuition, which is negative or feminine. Because women are positive in the emotional side, men are positive on the thought or mental side. The basic duality, throughout all life you get it. When you reduce the duality to one, you get the simple, direct, straightforward path. Next slide. Now, I've already spoken about intuition, the bypass of emotion, that path of consciousness by means of which we can slip into a greater experience apart from mind. Next slide, please. Now, Claude Bragdon, a very famous theosophical writer, explained it this way. He said, intuition is like the veiled queen that drop their handkerchiefs into the world of emotion and then are gone. Now, when an intuition comes into the emotional body, it, as it were, also, because the two are interlinked, reaches the mind. And the mind immediately starts to crystallize something which cannot be crystallized. So an intuitional experience is one that is beyond mind, and once you apply the mind to it and try and think out what happens, you lose your intuition. And you have to act very quickly, and you have to act without the mind. You have to act directly, and it's difficult for us to do, because we're so used to thinking, is that right action or wrong action? But if you are quick, and you feel that a thing is right, and act on it, act on impulse, you can be right, and you can be miles ahead of the mind, because intuition is a higher faculty. Next please. Now, coming back to this diagram, we'll see what happens. There is your consciousness, and the feminine aspect of consciousness slipping through from the emotions into the world of intuition and back to the highest principle. The highest principle of man is here, the lowest principle of man is here at the physical brain and the physical body. And you can go about it that negative way, the intuitional way. Now, when I say negative, I should say that it is positive from a spiritual point of view. And there is a growing appreciation today that it is the positive path of comparison and pigeonhole thought that is leading man astray. And if we opened our hearts to the intuitional and the wider aspects of human existence, which is the intuitional path, we would be nearer the truth. And we get there by the negative approach, which is the leaving behind of all that which is hindering us, and, as it were, entering the cloud of unknowing, as it was called in that very lovely book. That nothingness, not this, not that, which is the Hindu way of putting it. In other words, we leave aside that which is known, and we enter the world of that which is not known. That is a meditational approach which today is leading towards the understanding of the spiritual reality of the intuitional path which leads to the understanding of the one life. Next slide, please. But man primarily is a thinker. Now, this is the statue by Rodin of man the thinker. It is the mind of man, that self-conscious power within him, which allows him to think and to make choices and to rule his own destiny to some extent anyway, which puts him in a class beyond the animals. Man has that highest faculty in the world today because he is Manu the thinker. Rodin himself knew something of Eastern philosophies and was by nature a mystic. And he has given us in this sculpture something of that quality of the mind of man as being the link with his spiritual power. Now, next slide, please, and we'll see exactly how that works out. Man, through his mind, is a self-conscious focus of the one life. Now, conscious, when we're talking about the intuitional path, we admitted that some of it was, as it were, beyond us. But the mind, the path of the mind, is one that we have full control on, full control over. We are fully self-conscious. At the lower mind, we will be fully self-conscious at the higher level of mind. That's a very good definition of man. A self-conscious focus of the one, the divine life. The highest attribute of man is will. He then has the wisdom aspect, or the one life aspect, which we call intuition, and he then has mind, emotions, vitality, and a physical body. And he is a focus of the one life, and the focus is in mind. Let's have the next slide, please. See for this here. Now, the mind is focused at that point where the higher becomes the lower. And when we cross the bridge from the lower to the higher mind, we are entering the from the lower to the higher attribute of man's makeup. I think I talked about that before. Should we pass to the next slide, please? Now, let's look at it on this diagram. We here have the world of focus. First of all, here, solid, liquid, and gas, all of which are tangible to the senses and can be evaluated by, at this point here, which is the physical brain. Above that, we get into the superphysical, etheric aspect, and then into the mental aspect of mind, the higher aspect of mind, and up into spiritual will. Now, there's the all-important bridge. That is the antikarma, where the lower mind joins the higher mind. That is the point in which we're concentrating at the moment. There is another bridge here, the brain, that we have automatically, we have reached automatic control of the brain. We react automatically. We have practically full control over the brain. There is a center here, a center of each, and our emotional center there is nearly automatic too. There is a center here, which is at the center of the Buddhic world, the intuitional world, which we will someday have to control completely. And that center is, of course, the center of the manifested life of the solar system, and this is the center of man, the microcosm of the macrocosm. That's 3.5 planes from the top and 3.5 planes from the bottom. There's two more I haven't shown here. This man only goes from there to there. That's the center for man. That's the center for manifestation, for God. That's why the one life is centered here. The separate life of man is centered there. So these are the crossovers, are the important point in the understanding of spiritual awakening. Next slide, please. Now I'm going to look at this a little differently. This is the triangle of man's personality of body, vitality, thought, feeling, and thought. From this point of view, from the point of view of personality, can you focus that just a little bit better? That's better. From the point of view of personality, man is basically a physical body and all the sense impressions that go with it. Then he becomes sensation, which of course is the nervous system, which interprets or actually is the mechanism of those sense impressions. Then he's feeling, and then lastly he is thought. That is his highest attribute of the lived personality. And that's the lower triangle of man's nature. And the one, of course, in which we are fully concentrated. That is life to us, to a very large extent, because as we struggle for existence, we are bound up, especially with things down here in the physical world, and by our thoughts and feelings, which we build into our personalities and make our own. Next slide, please. But man is more than a physical body, a body of thought and feeling. He is a spiritual being. And that which gives life to his personality is the play of that spirituality the higher aspect of his being down through the personality right to the level of the physical world. When that plays, we have life. When it is withdrawn, we go to sleep. When it is drawn permanently, we die. But that is man. The other isn't. And when we understand it from that point of view, we'll understand what spiritual awakening is. Because man is a spiritual being and not a body or personality. Next slide, please. There's a little bit of a difference here. We still have the same personality. We have the spiritual being playing through it. But the red color becomes less as we go down. Because the power of the spiritual life is veiled as it comes into the lower world of manifestation. It's limited, it's conditioned to a far greater extent. Here we have stability. It's hard to move in the physical world. The world of sensation is more mobile. The world of feeling is quicker and easier to manipulate. And thoughts more so still. You try thinking of the job you're going to do. You can think about it in your mind and you can do it in a couple of... just like that. It takes you the whole of Saturday morning to realize it. You see what I mean? It's the limitations of the dense world that slow down the effect of the spiritual nature of man. It is limited and confined. And the limitation is increased as we come down. Veils over consciousness, Mr. Dhinarajadatta called it. Next, please. Now we have the higher nature of man, which is primarily spiritual will, which is godlike, is the godlike attribute of man's nature. And it is all important. It is the one reality. It is the spark of the divine, which is man's highest nature. And we come down, we have intuition, we've talked about, and we have creative thought, which is the highest aspect of mind. That really is man. The other triangle is the vehicle that he uses for experience in the lower world. Next, please. Now these two meet. Madame Blavatsky's definition was man, of man, was man is him in whom highest spirit and lowest matter are united by intellect. Now remember the crossover in our diagram? There it is. It's exactly the same thing. There's the personality which has lower mind in it. Here's the spiritual aspect of man which has higher mind in it. And in the meeting of those two aspects of mind, we have the junction between the world of matter and the world of the spirit. And that takes place in man. Next slide, please. We look at it this way. Man as a spiritual being. The red triangle. Man as a personality, which is an instrument that he uses. And in between them are the limbs of the mind. If we take the spiritual being as a lantern or projector as we have here, then the light is thrown down through the lens, which is the meeting place between the two aspects of mind, into the personality. And there is somewhere or other a slide which makes a pattern and which gives us consciousness. Now if that lens is true, if the link up between the higher and the lower is right, then the spiritual force, the spiritual nature of man can flow freely and produce a true image. When the lens of the mind is not true, then the image is distorted. It's lost in the world of illusion, in the world of Maya. So that's where we have to develop now, is that passage from the lower to the higher mind, the antakarana, the bridge. Next, please. Just by way, of course, this is the famous symbol, that is the battleground of life, where the spiritual nature of man battles in life, enmeshed and encased in the world of form, the world of material world of the personality. The theosophical symbol, the Jewish symbol, only in those actually they are interlaced. The great battle of life, spirit in matter. Next, please. This is Plato's way of putting it. Plato, in his analogy of the cave in the Republic, had this. He had the white light of unity coming as sunlight through the mouth of a cave in which a man, a prisoner, sat and watched the back of the cave. Here we have unity, and this actually is the play of duality. Across that front of the cave, men and women walked in the sunlight, and their shadows were cast on the back of the cave. And he interpreted the nature of the world outside by watching the play of the shadows on the back wall of the cave. And that really is what we are doing. All we have to do is turn around and look into the sunlight and see the nature of reality. But we are primarily interested in the shadows, the play of the life in the physical world. Next, please. Again, we have the nature of the self, unity and bliss. Here we have separativeness, suffering, competition, and all the troubles of physical existence. There can be no evil above that point in the true sense. In the spiritual world, there is no evil, there is only absence of evil. There is no evil, there is only absence of good. Here, above that point, there is no duality, there is unity. Duality belongs to the lower world of the personality. Duality is that which makes possible existence in the physical and the world of the personality of thought and feeling. The lens of the mind is the junction between the two. Next page. I'm talking here all about the third path, because it is the basic one that we have to travel over at the present moment. And years ago, it was put in Raja Yoga and the teachings of the ancient Hindus. Patanjali said, your first instruction is to hinder the instruction, to hinder the modifications of the mind. Now you know that as soon as you start thinking, it links up with a previous memory. And that previous memory is so strong, it colors all your thinking. When you meet a person, you remember your last meeting with them, and that colors your reaction towards them. We are a whole lot of build-ups, emotional and mental build-ups, which become our personality and which rule us. And he said, slow them down. Stop the mind flitting from one thing to another. Stop it being distracted by your emotional and mental build-ups. That, of course, is done by meditation, by stilling the mind and entering the world of the silence, where the still, small voice of the silence speaks, and you know your unity with all life and your godlike nature. Next piece. Very old, that instruction, but of course it is the method by which you can cross the bridge of Antikarana. Now come to the last slide. The higher consciousness can cross the bridge of Antikarana, command the attention of the lower self, and lift the consciousness deliberately over the bridge into direct experience of oneness, where we know not only the blinding glory of our own higher self, but also the ultimate reality which we call God. This is the goal of all true meditation and yoga, of prayer and religious practice. My whole lecture is summed up by Mr. J. Krishnamurti when he says, judgment and comparison commit us irrevocably to duality. Only choiceless awareness can lead to non-duality, to the reconciliation of the opposites in total understanding and in total love. In the East, the lotus has always been taken as a symbol of spiritual awakening. With its roots in the mud, it grows through the water of the emotions, to the air of the mind, and unfolds the perfection of its blossom to the sunlight of the spirit. The immortal stanzas of Sir Edwin Arnold describe this liberation, which for all men is the final spiritual awakening. I take refuge in thy name and thee. I take refuge in thy law of good. I take refuge in thy order, Om. The dew is on the lotus. Rise, great sun, and lift my leaf and mix me with the waves. Om Mani Padme Om. The sunrise comes, and the dewdrop slips into the shining sea.